Good evening, everyone, and thank you for joining the Mini PC Show, where big talk and little machines. And today is the day out of the year to March 4th. I just have to get that joke out there. Dor, how are you doing today, buddy?
Dude, I didn't even see that coming. Good job, sir. Good job.
Oh, thank you very much. I appreciate that.
I'm doing really good. Had a normal, quote-unquote, busy week, but I did have more than a couple Amazon deliveries at my door and, shipments arrive at my door this week.
Nice.
Yeah, and really quick, I'll say the chip, the $9 computer, I am blown away at how well it performs for only being $9. That's like the 5-second review for it.
Awesome. And with us as a special guest, we have Richard Hughes from TLLTS.org. Rich, how are you doing, my friend?
Oh, good. Hiding out in the sunny Southern Command.
That is awesome. And
at my door, I had a box from Dor.
It must be Christmas because, you know, I had a box from Dor as well, too, at my doorstep. What did you end up getting?
I got, is that the Orange Pie 1?
Yes.
I got the Orange Pie 1, this mug here. Let's see, the Banana Pie M3 and 2. What are they? The Android, what do you call the Android things, the sticks?
MK8022s.
So I got two of them things, got to figure out where the cables are that I got for them.
Awesome. So for those who aren't privy to the mugs, so we have nice little mini PC show mugs with our logo. So if you head on to the Google Plus community webpage, you'll see the actual logo design, which is actually cased on our on some mugs that we received. I think are pretty awesome.
Yeah, and I gotta say, hopefully very soon you'll be able to go to podnuts.com/mugs. And get your own. I've been talking to Joe Heck, and he said that his wife would like the opportunity to be our quote-unquote official mug supplier kind of thing. And I met both of them. I would never say no to Linda. Linda's way too nice of a person. So if she wants to do it, I'm on board.
Joe and Linda, thank you very much.
Well, and thank you. And it's a really nicely done mug. The image is on both sides, which most mugs, you only get an image on one side. So definitely really nice quality.
Yeah, I was going to snap a photo of it this afternoon when I was having my coffee, but things were such a cluster, I didn't even get a chance to. But I'll get that posted on the community page there.
Very cool, yeah. And I will say, yeah, Richard has a Banana Pie M3. That's the one that a lot of people report, if you're not careful, you will easily cause it to overheat and basically do a shutdown on it. So I asked Richard, beat it up. Just beat the crap out of it. See what you can make it do. I have another Banana Pie M3 here. So I'm going to basically do the same, and I'm going to see if I can get it to basically catch fire. And the Banana Pie M2 was basically a gift from Joe Heck. He said, I don't have a use for this one anymore. So he gave that one to me. That one got kind of mixed reviews. What I did find out, a banana is not a banana. Because literally like 3 or 4 different companies make banana branded hardware. The one I really am a fan of is the Banana Pro. That's made by Maker, who is supported by John Mad Dog Hall. And if he supports it, you know there's some quality or some good vibes going on there kind of thing. And that's the one that I love. It works fantastic. But these other ones, I'm tempted to see if I can make them literally catch fire.
No, it's not. A little surprised to see a picture of John without a drink in his hand.
Maybe it's in his back pocket because he always has his flask. Okay, and now real quick, we have a giveaway. This is a Z-Sun hackable Wi-Fi enabled micro SD card USB connected device. You can basically hook this up to a portable battery pack and have on the go web server hosting content, which I found really interesting. We have, first we got to mention the voicemail. I didn't have time to do any editing to it or anything, and it's over 3 minutes long. It was a voicemail from Kevin Wisher, who I gotta say is one of the more educated podcast listeners, I think, who answers, the call for emails and stuff. And he was talking about the, Banana Pie and the Raspberry Pi crash plan. And he said he was a little disappointed it was only one drive. he has made a couple comments before about doing local mini PC storage solutions, and he always wants to have RAID somehow involved. And I understand why he says that. Me personally, I'm kind of terrified of RAID because I know when the wrong thing goes up in RAID, it's really hard to recover from. And to me, I've had like a knee-jerk reaction. Like some people are burnt by Seagate. Some people are burnt by Western Digital. I'm burnt by RAID.
Hmm. It's funny. The only thing I ever had die on me was the IBM DeskStar, which was made by Hitachi, which they call the death. The recovery solution I found that worked is I actually put in a Ziploc bag in a container, froze it in the freezer, and with the top end of the bag so I could open it up and connect the ports, the wires to it. And I was able to get all my data off before.
I hope you got everything off quick. That's all I got to say.
Yeah. Good size block of ice.
Well, yeah, but before I had time to heat up or I don't know. Okay, so Kevin is entered into our giveaway. I will say that. Hey, now we have a couple emails to go through. These are all going to be entered into the giveaway. First is by is from Justin via podnuts.com. You click on contact. You can click on the shows and send emails. He said, "Hi, everyone. Justin here, and I just wanted to say hi. You guys are having a great and educative show. Don't have any mini PCs right now, but I'm waiting for my Pine 64. Until that, I backed on Kickstarter. I'm also thinking on some Pi projects for this summer, like a weather station. Do you have any suggestions? I'm also waiting for the, I think it's pronounced Wiolink, W-I-O-L-I-N-K starter kit. It is not a mini PC, but it is a simple IoT board for groove sensors." Ooh, okay. And he says, about the Zsun, I think it is a great find. I will totally use it for syncing music on the PC and the car. And I will put the link here in our chat so everyone can see it. This stuff is endless. Okay, what this looks like, this is, I don't want to say a stupid board, but it is just a board that can connect different sensors and devices. And it's only, I think it was $14. Wiolink. I really am, because I didn't have time to look at this, I'm really not positive how this hardware is utilized, but I know it's really cheap. Looks like you can hook up at least 6 devices, connect to it via, looks like micro USB. So that's, I'm going to guess, the main way to get into it and maybe program it or read what's going on with all these sensors.
It reminds me of an Arduino, how you would code an Arduino board. But like you said, it's got 3 sensors on one side, 3 connectors on one side and 3 connectors on the other side, which combines the 6 sensors. And it looks like you need to get their proprietary, I don't know if it's open source or proprietary, but it looks like you need to connect their hardware as well to these ports to enable certain functions like barometric pressure readings or temperature readings and so forth. But it was a Kickstarter project that looks like it was successful.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's 6 big ports on here, and the ports are labeled this: digital 0, digital 1, digital 2, analog, UART, 12C, and then there's the battery holder and micro USB plus 2 buttons on the board. So yeah, this looks like more of the not the brains of a solution, but more like the nervous system of a solution, if you will, the thing that connects other things.
I believe that last port is I2C.
I2C. Ah, okay. Gotcha.
Yeah, well, this for $14 looks pretty cool.
Yeah.
Now this can.
Yeah, I agree. For $14, this is a no-brainer. I mean, anything that.
Yeah, we're definitely having some network issues with you, Richard. I'm going to guess you're connecting via Wi-Fi. He is asking for weather station-related projects, and he also mentioned the Pine 64. I'll say Pine 64 is coming, so we can't plan on anything with that yet. But if we just go to Hackster, HackSTER.io, and then if you click on platforms, you can click on Raspberry Pi if you want. You can look at all those projects. I guarantee you there's multiple simple weather station type projects there. I'm a believer. My old buddy, Steve C, he didn't believe in weather apps. He didn't believe in people having weather stations. He believed in looking out your window to see what the weather was like.
Well, I think the weather station is cool, being able to share. I believe it's a Dallas Semiconductor weather station that I put together but never put outside. And that ran on the one wire, the Dallas Semiconductor one wire, which I guess they got bought by Microchip.
Gotcha.
You know what would be kind of cool? If you could upload that information to your local weather channel.
Sharing is the big deal. And at the time, there were two hobbies I was very involved in. One was flying model airplanes, and the other was scuba diving. And the visibility where I dove in New York would range from, 6 inches to 30 feet. And I always wanted to do something where I had a camera underwater so I could see the visibility, or a weather station at the model airplane field so I could see how bad the weather was, the wind was blowing.
Hmm. Yeah, now that's the kind of use case I could see if you have a activity like quadcoptering or where wind is a factor, so you can easily, quickly see, is it even worth my time to go outside and set this thing up or not?
Right.
Yeah, that definitely makes sense. I highly encourage you to take a look at hackster.io and just type in weather. Unfortunately, though, I think you'll be overwhelmed with the number of projects you can do there, but they are a great many. Pine 64, I'm a little bit giddy for, but we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you want to read the next email, Brian?
Sure, and that's going to be from Jesse. And Jesse writes, "Hello, guys. Have a question in regards to which PC to buy and which OS to run. I have either narrowed it down to a Banana Pi Pro or a Raspberry 2. Which I'm looking to do is to be able to run Kodi mostly in my living room and to be able to make a little retro gaming rig and put some emulators on the system. Any thoughts or recommendations would be helpful, or if you have another mini PC in mind, that would be great too. Thanks, Jesse, and we appreciate that email." We do have some extra goodies on our later on in the show that we could share with you, but what are your first thoughts, guys, on between the Banana Pi Pro and the Raspberry 2 for a Kodi box or a gaming rig?
Well, for the Kodi box, it's really hard to go against the Raspberry Pi. Their graphics driver continuously getting worked on, it's now, I think, really hard to beat compared to the Banana Pro. Banana Pro is not really a video device. It's more of a networking device and a SATA device. So if it's just Kodi you're worrying about, it's hard to go wrong right now today with the Pi, with the Banana, with the Raspberry Pi. But for gaming, the Raspberry Pi really doesn't have a lot of horsepower. So then you would probably be better off with the Banana Pro. But I'm going to throw another monkey wrench into this and say you shouldn't get either one of them. Nor should you get the Raspberry Pi 3, which just got announced and just got delivered and shipped out. I'm going to say you should, which just also today started shipping out from a Maradroid, is the Odroid C2. I'm gonna bank right now and say the Odroid C2 is going to be better for Kodi and better for retro gaming. And the thing I'm gonna throw out there, I'm gonna make sure it is in the notes, is called Berry Boot. I did not know this. Lord Drakenblut and Matthew Williams, who was on Tilts last weekend, mentioned how with Berry Boot you can dual boot. Most of these gaming OSs are really single purpose. So if you want to do Kodi and gaming, you either have to physically switch out the cards, which is a pain in the butt, or you have to literally reflash your OS. With Berry Boot, it says you can dual boot. It would be really nice to be able to say, I'm in my Kodi, now reboot, and now let me go into my gaming rig kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to say Berry Boot is probably the one you want to look at. And right now, it basically just says Berry Boot is preferred on Raspberry Pi solutions. But they do have a link to other devices that they are compatible with. QBoard 2, Hackberry, I would literally try to get this thing running on something, to be honest. It has to be able, I'm thinking, to support more than this. And if it doesn't, then I think we as a community need to complain to this group.
So I was going to chime in, but my response may not be too meaningful. And I do have the Banana Pi Pro running crash plan, and that thing's been bulletproof, no problem. I do have a Raspberry Pi 2, and it actually does two things. One is it's running PiAware, which basically through SDR, software-defined radio, it's picking up the ADS-B and the Mode-S transponders of aircraft and feeding it to FlightAware. It also opens my garage door. And I think there's a problem with the JVM and the cleanup, the garbage collection. And every 24 plus hours, I need to physically reboot it, either, you know, SSH into it and reboot it. I don't think that has anything to do with the hardware. I think it has to do with the PiAware software, the PiAware image running on it. So I wouldn't want to throw the Raspberry Pi under the bus for that. So that's why I said it wouldn't quite be meaningful.
Well, it is good to know either way. Yeah. Oh, man. And the Raspberry Pi 3 is much more powerful than the Raspberry Pi 2. But I'm still going to have a hard time suggesting it for everybody's purpose. I will say that.
I think the Raspberry Pi 2 does a really good job with the video encoding, like you had mentioned before. And I can't. Something inside of me is gonna think that the Banana Pi is not gonna have a hard time with it either, but I think the ultimate de facto comes into what kind of SD card that you're installing and using as well too. I've seen that play a huge factor in how the performance is. I know the Class 10 SD cards is the way to go when you're looking for input output read and write speeds. I just had a friend of mine get a Raspberry Pi 2 and had a similar setup as mine, and he was just having a horrible experience with video playback, and couldn't imagine why until he was telling me what kind of SD card that he was using. So you don't want to skimp out and get the cheapest one if you can, you know, splurge a little bit and get the most fastest kind that you can get.
Well, really, you probably don't need much more than 8 gig SD card kicking around. And right. A Class 10 8 gig, if you paid more than $10 for it, you're paying too much, way too much.
Yeah, I'll just say with it matters which OSs that you're running. Most of the EXT 3 or 4 file systems, if you get them close to 80% filled, you're going to experience problems and slowdowns. So you can probably get by with 8. But if you can get a 16, I would say it's just an extra cushion or buffer just in case. And they are still cheap. I mean, they are still cheap. But the bottom line is it's getting to the point where I don't know if you could pick a bad board for these purposes. I think yeah. They'll all work. It's just a question of how satisfactory. Well, they work in one of the features of the board.
Right.
Okay. Well, I saw a video online. Somebody had a Pi Zero and they're running Kodi on it.
Yeah, and it was streaming pretty flawlessly too. I liked it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's $5. $5 after shipping, I want to say almost $20. So
yeah. I guess to Jesse's question, it would all depend on what his budget's like. I mean, he mentioned two single board microprocessors, which are well under $100. So, you know, if he's trying to go that route, then you know, obviously, would you know, stick to our advice here. But if he's willing to spend a little bit extra more, I would say keep on listening. We got a few extra treats in for you.
Well, one of the things, the Pi Pro has the onboard Wi-Fi. So yeah. If you don't want to pay extra for Wi-Fi, or you want to build onto it, and not use up a USB port, that's a good way to go. Also,
absolutely, yeah.
Good point, Richard.
We have another email here from Matthew Williams, Lord D, because of the. I'm not going to call him a devil. He's too good of a guy. He wrote in mini PC guys. I'm certainly interested in the Z Sun device. I've been looking at the Vocor. That's the super small, almost thumbnail size computer board for trying to build a pen testing Dropbox. And I think the Z Sun could be a good replacement for that usage, plugged into a battery pack. I I think this could be really great for a reverse SSH proxy and other interesting usages. And in typical fashion, every time I speak with Matthew, he never wants to do anything simple or easy. He always wants to do something where, you know, it's going to make the device glow, or something that's potentially bordering on illegal if he was doing it to the other. I mean, he is definitely a what I call a pounder. He beats stuff up until it like submits. I gotta say, the Vocor is really cool. It is like $30, I believe. No, I can't remember the price. It wasn't too expensive, but it was definitely just a little bit. And the Zsun, where if he wins it, it's just completely free. So you are definitely in the running for this, Matthew. Thank you. Do you want to read one of the next ones here, Brian? We have two more, I think.
Yes, sir. And I think this is from Lyle. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Looks like I'm looking at the right one. It says, good to hear you again. Was wondering what happened. I can't get the Mini PC Show up on the search list with the podcast app. All the other shows are there. Also, what app do you recommend for podcasting on my iPhone? Is that a trick question there, Lyle? Mm. Something cool yesterday, I fit contacts from the zombies of The Walking Dead. Like a little joke about a guy who told the priest about sleeping with the... Well, I don't want to talk about that. But anyways, yeah. Lyle, to answer your question, I think, if I'm not mistaken, I think there's a built-in podcast app. If not on your iPhone, if not, you can probably download the app from the App Store that runs natively on the iPhone. Other than that, what would you recommend, Dor?
I would recommend we talk to Richard. He's my he's my default Apple weenie.
Well, wait a second. One, I don't have Apple portable devices, and I only run the Mac OS on Intel hardware. So can't answer those questions. In fact, when my laptop and desktop Hackintosh say they want to update this application called, oh my gosh, what is it called?
iTunes?
Yes, that's it. Thank you. I say no.
Good man.
And if I could remove it, I would.
Good man. Yeah, I did kid around with Lyle and I replied, well, my recommendation would be, I said, you want a good podcasting app for iPhone, .. Really? Well, my suggestion is to sell that piece of crap and get an Android device. I'm sorry, Lyle. I couldn't help it. It's in my contract. I have to say that kind of thing. If you just search for podcast, you're going to find a whole bunch. The only one I know that is on both devices and people seem to like is Podcast, Pocket Cast, which I despise because it is incredibly bloaty and heavy. And on every device, when I put it up to like 2.0 speed, it just crumbles and falls apart and starts to crash. So I can't use that app. Mm. Now, the dirty secret. I kind of didn't put us on iTunes for more than 5 episodes on purpose. I wanted to see what kind of growth we could get pre-iTunes. And unfortunately, all of these podcasting apps on every platform seem to only want to search the iTunes market when you look for a podcast. So if we're not in iTunes, you're not going to be able to find us. So the only people who were able to listen to us were super dedicated people who figured out the workaround of how to add a feed manually, or literally came to the website and hit play. I'm happy to say, since being in iTunes now for just over a week and a half, we have near zero growth in downloads, which I like, because then it doesn't mean iTunes is important anymore. But I will say, you might not have known, Lyle, but your email was sent in time where you're going to be entered in for this contest giveaway. I want to thank you, Lyle.
Absolutely.
Okay, now, this last one this one's actually too late. I didn't see the date, but it was another one about, or too early. This one was January 27th, not February 27th. About not being able to find it again on iTunes. Sorry, guys, but we did. Okay, so we have Kevin Wishers 3-minute email about
please.
Raspberry Pi and the Western Digital joint venture, and he really would like to have Raid. We have Justin, who wants to do a weather project. Jesse, Raspberry Pi 2 or Banana Pro. Lord D, who wants to, I think, catch the device on fire. And then we have Lyle. So what I'm going to say, Brian, you're the newest guy to podcasting. I'm going to let you decide who wins.
Well, I'm going to go with Kevin because that voicemail, man.
It was passionate.
It was. I had very dedicated, like you said, and I congratulate you, my friend. Good job.
Okay, I will open up his email and leave it open just so I remember. And as soon as the show is over, I will send him an email asking him for his address so I can send it out to him. Now, with that, here's the gimmick, guys. We have another giveaway. And this giveaway is going to be for the Raspberry Pi 3. Wow. I literally ordered it the morning you could, literally at 7 a.m., and I literally got this thing in yesterday. I will say, compared to the Raspberry Pi 2, this is almost 50% faster is all of the benchmarks that I'm seeing. So it is a fair device for what you get. The biggest reason why I want to support Raspberry Pi is not because I like their hardware. I am now to the point where I almost don't like their hardware. It's because I'm becoming a snob with this hardware. But what they've done for single board computings, what they've done for the environment, for the people, for the projects, for the other hardware, is everything. Without the Raspberry Pi, nothing of these other devices would even exist. So every chance I have, I'm going to try to support them. And I supported them by buying a Raspberry Pi 3, and I did buy a case. That's not here yet. And I'm going to give both of these away to a listener. The same constraints and restraints and way to do it. You listen, you send in a voicemail or an email. History might repeat itself, and it might be a voicemail winning again. So maybe you should send in a voicemail, people, but try to keep it less than 3 minutes.
Yes, thank you. And I want to, just like a double scoop of ice cream, add on top of that, Raspberry Pi, like I said, I don't want to make this show to be the Raspberry Pi show. It is, you know, obviously the mini PC show, but you just can't get away from the Raspberry Pi just because of the dense community population there is. And that's what really, I think, in my book, makes a really good product, is the community that it supports. So, you know, when I first saw the UDO board, I don't know if you guys remember the UDO board that came out, whopping 1 gig of RAM with a quad core processor before the Raspberry Pi caught up to speed with it. I thought this was a brilliant idea, but there wasn't a huge following behind it. And so to date now, I mean, how many iterations did we see with the Raspberry Pi? We see three iterations, no, even more than three iterations, goodness. But, you know, the UDO still has the single UDO board. So there, right there, is a testament to, you know, why we want to support, like you said, do the Raspberry Pi so much.
Absolutely. And it's only going to keep growing and keep getting bigger. And I'm okay with that. And I'm okay with literally buying them once in a while and just giving them away, because without these guys, nobody else would exist.
You know, I've been doing this kind of stuff for more than 10 years. And, you know, back to the basic stamps, pick microcontrollers, pick sticks. And it was just really a pain in the butt to program, to run, to interact with them. And we're talking pre-Wi-Fi, pre-Ethernet. You're serially programming out of your parallel port with some of these devices. It just all sorts of hokey horse crap. And, you know, I did a lot. I did actually a cool project that was displayed in LA way back when, and it was a bunch of basic stamp twos networked together. I wrote the network, built the hardware for the network. You got to give them credit for bringing all of this hardware out to the public, where people are hacked. It's never been easier.
Yeah, and I think because of them, they basically brought the prices down for manufacturing well. Because
single board computers, we were talking like x86 or ARMs, were, you know, hundreds of dollars, $200, $300.
Yeah, and they weren't very powerful.
No.
In comparison, and the tool chain used to develop stuff on it was nothing like we have today.
And now they're real computers, basically. I mean, you can plug them into your HD, you know, your 2K, 4K TV and get full resolution.
Yeah. Okay. This is going to be the least link-filled show we ever had. But right now, at my work, most of my job is now meetings. So what I did was I brought in my Qbox Lite. They don't even make it anymore because it was not powerful enough. That thing was a dual core ARM processor, gig of RAM, NIC, USB, eSATA, Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, all built in. I have that sitting underneath my monitor and I have it logged in. I'm using Thunderbird with Gmail, multiple Gmail accounts with multiple plugins installed. I have a separate browser window open to my Works VPN into my Outlook web access with my email, my calendar up. And then I have another browser window up with Web Voxer up. And it doesn't work perfectly snappy, but it works good, solid, and it looks freaking gorgeous. And it's old. It's now over a year old, and that thing works good. The three boards I want, if you guys can feel like commenting on them, the three boards I want you to comment on, I think are the three ones that are right now looking to be the most popular, powerful this year. Raspberry Pi 3, Pine 64, and the Odroid C2. Do you guys have any thoughts on any of them or none?
Well, I have no firsthand experience, but you hear me, if you listen to Beyond Tilt, you hear me rail against tech fashion. And unfortunately, I'm bitten, I'm hooked, mm-hmm. hook, line, and sinker. I'm like, when do I get my first paycheck that I can order some of these things? And I want one of each. I want to try them all out.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll say the only problem with them right now is the Pine 64 is technically it's still a type of vaporware. The only people that have them are people who are in the thing doing testing for them and they're not shipping yet. But they have a lot of promise behind them. Hopefully they have the community behind them as well. And that's what we really don't know yet. But I think that's a good, solid device. They have one with 2 gig of RAM with more hardware behind it. So it looks like it could be a good device. The Raspberry Pi 3, we know the community is going to be ballistic. They're going to be the annoying people where everywhere you go, Raspberry Pi, everything's Raspberry Pi. But I personally believe the Odroid C2 is going to be the closest thing to a near desktop experience, actually being able to replace more people's desktop like usage with a mini computer. Here's the comparison I've been giving people.
I can't believe you said that.
I know, I'm sorry. Raspberry Pi 2 1.2 quad core processor. Odroid C2 quad core 2.0 processor. Both of them are ARM V7, so it's similar structure architecture. Raspberry Pi 3 1 gig of DDR RAM. Odroid C2 2 gigabytes of DDR3 RAM.
Now you're talking.
I know. But now here to me is the coup de grace. Raspberry Pi 10100 NIC. And you can never get 10100 speeds on it because it's on the same bus as USB.
Right.
Okay. The Odroid C2 gigabit Ethernet on its own bus separate from USB. Now, the Raspberry Pi has built-in Bluetooth and Wi-Fi. The Odroid does not. The Raspberry Pi has 4 USB ports. The Odroid has 2. They both have similar HDMI outs. The Odroid, there's a physical switch, I believe, you can change to powering it up from a barrel connector, a DC barrel connector, or switch it to normal micro USB. And I say normal micro USB because that's what I really want out of thing. To me, the only differentiating thing after that is, like, the earlier email, the guy wants to do a home theater kind of thing. If you want to do a home theater kind of box and have a sexy little box sitting in front of that TV, well, then you have to get the Raspberry Pi 3 because the number of cases for it are insane. Fancy wood cases, aluminum cases, steel cases, plastic cases, light up cases, glowing cases. For the Odroid C2, you're going to have like 2 or 3 cases to pick from. And you can download the plans yourself and print it yourself. So they're not fancy. They're not frilly. But I'm firmly believing if I put Armbian or something else on that device with 2 gigs of RAM, quad core 2.0, gigabit NIC, I'm going to get really close to desktop replacement for normal YouTubing and Facebooking.
Velcro it on the back of the monitor.
Yes, absolutely. And yeah, the 2 gig of RAM to me is one of the kickers that's going to be able to do it. And I want to say there was another Odroid I was looking at where it had 4 gigs of RAM on board. And I just had to look away. Okay. Oh yeah. Here's the real ultimate kicker. Raspberry Pi, $35. Odroid C2, you know, almost twice of this, almost twice of that, 80% more processor, and it's only $41. So it's only $7 more. Everyone was screaming about how affordable the Raspberry Pi was. Well, this is only $7 more, and you get twice the RAM, more powerful NIC, 80% more processor. Hard to pass up, really hard to pass up. And I got my email today saying mine shipped. Oh, giddy giddy.
That was my big quip about the Pi Zero. It's $5. It costs you $7 to ship it, whatever. But then if you want to do any I.O. with it, you're going to be stacking up the money. Now, what the Pi Zero is great for is if you're not doing I.O., if it's maybe on a mobile robotic base or doing something where you're just doing computing.
Yeah, I saw one great hack. I thought it was a Xbox. No, it was a Super Nintendo controller. Opened up, they shoved the Pi Zero in the Super Nintendo controller, and they were able to have a emulator built into a Super NES controller. That was pretty epic.
Yeah.
But yeah, I do think this is the year. I mean, there was a link in the notes, and there was a link in the Google Plus community to a Wikipedia page comparing of a single board computers. Oh my goodness. There's almost too many to even mention, okay? Every bit of 60 plus in this list. And here's the real problem. This year alone, if there's 60 in this list, which is easy 60, we're going to have at least another 120 released this year alone. Because I think this is the year of the mini computer trying to saturate every corner of the market.
Okay, so the last column is price range, and it's a number like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. What does that mean? Okay, so on the bottom, it's the notes. So 1 is 0 to 49, 2 is 50 to 79, and so on.
Yeah, all the way up to 170 and higher. Ooh, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, and if you keep going down, they have other charts comparing CPU, RAM, even the type of RAM, the
frequency. Price again,
but it's only a little bit. And then if you keep going down even further, there's a whole nother chart that is comparing storage, USB. There are devices with USB 3.0, and that was one of the Odroids had 3.0. Does it have Ethernet? Does it have Wi-Fi? Does it have SATA? Does it have Bluetooth? Does it have SPI? Does it have GPI? Does it have analog?
Whew, the list goes on. This is very overwhelming.
Yeah. As soon as I saw it, I literally looked for a couple things, key things. And then I looked back and I was there for almost an hour on that one page. This is the thing that I mentioned to Richard, I know like a month and a half ago, saying I'm tempted to put out a contract out. Whoever completes me a spreadsheet comparing a lot of these boards, I'll give them money. And then I found this, which is the exact thing I was looking for.
Jesse, this one's for you.
Yeah. Now, here's the question, Richard. You might know this, and I don't. I think I have an idea, but I'm not positive. Okay. Towards the bottom, they have a chart comparing OSs, operating systems. Okay. Now, under Linux, they have a couple different choices: no, custom kernel, and yes. Okay. Yes and yes mainline. Okay. Now, this is what I'm led to believe. When something says yes or yes mainline, that means almost a very standard kernel, very standard OS, not customized, not with special modules, not with special drivers, which means to me, it should be easier for someone to develop applications for that OS, which should give it an edge.
I believe you're right, because I'm looking at some of these, some say forked kernel recommended, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, and my logic is, that's a harder burden to even just create and update and keep going with that OS. But also, it might be a little bit harder to develop on as well. I don't know. But so whenever... Sorry. I think we have a little hang up in his Wi-Fi again. So when I see mainline, I gravitate toward all those boards that have that listed. I believe that means less issues down the road kind of thing. And one of them on there was the chip, the $9 computer. Mm-hmm. Just uses standard Linux Ubuntu 14.04. I got to say, for $9, I think those guys are doing a fantastic job. Bang for the buck is remarkable.
Wow. Yeah, I get kind of leery when I see forked kernel as well, too. Just for the fact of, like I said, when you want to see updates and support around it, how is that done? You know, you're waiting for someone else to get that updated for you.
Right. Yeah, I'm really not sure. I'm sure there's somebody out there right now screaming at the top of their lungs. And, hi, we can't hear you. okay, here is another link I wanted to bring out, but let me first clean it up because I despise when they this one was called this was line 95 on our sheets. Ubuntu Pi Flavor Maker. Which I do believe is maybe the best damn name to any project I've ever heard in my life. Okay. What it basically means is you can come to this website and it basically will let you make, quote unquote, your own custom Ubuntu based Raspberry Pi 2 or 3 OS. And they're kind of telling the truth, I will say that. I think this is a really smart idea because some people don't want GUIs. Some people want minimal OSs. Mm-hmm. Some people want full-fledged GUIs on their devices. And I'll say, to me, it's one of those things, to each their own. Whatever someone likes is the right one. There is no wrong one. But if you want to Ubuntu Mate, I'm not calling it Mate because it's spelled M-A-T-E, so it's Ubuntu Mate. Or if you want an XFCE desktop or a Ubuntu desktop, if you just look up Ubuntu Pi Flavor Maker, you can get yourself your own quote unquote custom version of that OS for your Pi.
Well, I think the Ubuntu Mate is the most popular version of Ubuntu that's out there, mate.
I couldn't understand a word you said.
No, this is the most brilliant idea that I've seen when it comes to regarding different flavors of OSs for your Raspberry Pi. How easy? I mean, this is awesome. It really is. I'm kind of psyched you found this. You can kind of pick and choose and add what you want and hit start and start downloading.
Yeah, and this is the kind I got to make sure I always have like in my queue. So anytime I want, I can just click it and go because I do not want to forget about this one. Okay, yeah, actually the very next one on the list was another one I found very interesting. This one I do believe came directly from Joe Heck. It was the pinout one. I've basically submitted. I'm done. I'm not going to fight anymore. I am going to do a project that requires me to use pinouts in one shape, way, or form. And the thing is, I have no idea what that project is even yet. But for instance, I dedicated myself, and now I have a meter, so I can, you know, I can test the credits.
It's called a beta, mate.
Yeah, exactly. So I can make sure I know what's going on. But then Joe sent me
one step above a battery checker. Come on.
Sure. Okay. Joe sent me over to pinout.xyz, and I gotta say I love the programming, quote unquote, behind this site. Very interactive, very easy to click and see what you're doing. Here's the beautiful part. A lot of boards try to make sure they're Raspberry Pi compatible. So if you come here and look at these pins, they're going to be the exact same on your board. Of course, you got to check it out to be sure. But I'm 99% sure most of the boards I'm buying are Pi compatible, which definitely helps a lot. So now when I'm ready to set my house on fire, I'll know which pins to connect to do that.
That does make a difference. You definitely don't want to blow anything up by mistake or burn something out that you've been waiting a week and a half to get.
Exactly.
See, my Raspberry Pi that's opening my garage door, I actually am powering it through the GPIO. It's only 3 volts. So basically the button I soldered, you know, the button that you'd push to open the garage door, soldered a bridge across that. And then I just put jumper wires onto, I think it's pin 3 and pin 18. So that's ground and plus 3 volts. So I just push the pin high for 2 seconds, and that powers the garage door opener and opens my garage door.
Nice. I don't have a garage door opener. I do have a garage door, but it doesn't have the assemblies to open it automatically. But I would like to put a sensor on the door for when it does become open, I'm going to be aware of it. And this will help. This will help with that a lot. Good, good find, door.
Well, Joe.
Thank you. Thank you, Joe.
Yeah, and I do believe the light sensor kind of thing is one of the, I don't want to say oldest, it's one of the most well-refined sensors there are. So that one should be really easy to find how to do. What amazes me about part of this stuff is the Raspberry Pi, through a micro USB, is getting enough power to power itself and yet have enough quote-unquote leftover power. It can power things through these GPIO pins. That literally makes my head hurt.
Well, you can power low voltage stuff. You're not powering anything high voltage. Just like my Banana Pi Pro, I can't power a 3.5-inch SATA drive. You can power a solid state and maybe some 2.5-inch drives.
I don't know. It's like you're mumbling too. I have no idea about how power works. I'm so confused. Electricity, I know. I've heard all the analogies before. What's the width of the pipe? It's not the thing. This is the amps. And that, I heard that all before. But until
I was going to say something, but it would have sounded like the debate last night with the Republican Party.
I'm so happy. I have no
idea. Not the width of the pipe. It's the motion of the ocean.
About the Exxon Valdez, I guess.
Yes.
And I'm sure when it comes time to when I have to know that stuff, I'm going to understand it. But for now, I just let it gloss right over me and say, interesting.
I think I'll get a good handle on it when things start burning out on you.
Sure, you mean stuff you've soldered is in an orbit right now?
No, I've never soldered anything, but that's the other thing I've admitted to myself. I don't have a choice. I'm going to have to get a soldering iron. But what I'm going to have to get, because I don't know what the hell I'm doing, I would love to find a kit, a starter kit, that has a little bit of flux with, I don't know, in it.
Go to Amazon. I'm sure you can find something.
Oh, yeah.
I got to say what my preference was, and this has started when I was, I didn't have my plane in a hangar, and I had it out in a field, you know, tied down outside as opposed to in a hangar. I put a new radio. I did some avionics and autopilot wiring on the aircraft. I love the butane soldering iron. I just love, love, love. It's more expensive. Like used to be, you go to Radio Shack, you buy a, you know, soldering iron that plugs into the wall for, you know, 10, 15 bucks. The butane irons are costing, you know, it could be 80, 90 bucks probably when I bought mine. But I just love no cord, stink hot fast, you know, or stink fast hot, I should say. And, you know, it doesn't matter where you are, inside, outside, you know, on a boat, working in a field. Maybe if you're doing Raspberry Pi stuff, that doesn't matter to you. You can get away with a different type of iron. But also, you know, shrink wrap is my other favorite thing. So if you start circuit bending, love the shrink wrap.
Shrink wrap, like the clear cellophane shrink wrap.
Well, actually, there's clear shrink wrap. There's shrink wrap all different colors, all different sizes. You may get like NiCad battery packs with that are shrink wrapped together as you know, part of the product packaging.
Okay. Well, you explained to me how soldering near fire temperatures and shrink wrap works together, because I would think the soldering would like destroy the shrink wrap.
Well, you slide it back on the wire and you...
Oh, tubing, like heat shrink tubing.
Right.
Okay. That makes sense. And every time I watch a video, the person always pulls out a friggin' cigarette lighter. And
you can do that.
I know. I'm like, you know, what year is this?
Now, interesting factoid. Original shrink tubing was radioactive because it was radiation that made it swell up and the heat made it contract back to its original diameter.
Well, I'm happy we don't live in that era anymore. At least I hope we don't.
Don't you have a radium watch?
No, I don't have a watch because I break them. And I'll say the one thing I forgot about soldering, which I was reminded today on a Google Plus posting, was no matter what, if you're doing any length of soldering for any length of time, you better make sure you have good ventilation. And I completely forgot about that.
Yeah.
So, I had a full head of hair when I started soldering.
Well, there you go. So I got to figure out where I can do this and not choke and have lead poisoning and everything else. Not quite sure yet. Not quite sure yet. But I'm going to do something. I don't know what I'm going to do, but I'm going to do something. And I still haven't got the frigging lap dock that Brian mentioned up and running. I found out one of the reasons why is because I have a Lapdock 500, which is the Razer Lapdock, and not the Lapdock 1000, which is the Atrix Lapdock. Supposedly the Lapdock 500 is harder to get working. But I do have, I believe now, all the proper cables. I have to cut a USB cable, full-size USB cable. Then I have to splice a micro USB cable, and I'm going to have to make a cable with three ends to it. A micro USB and two micro USB, micro USB, and full-size USB. And one of them goes into a laptop. The micro goes in the laptop. The micro goes into the power of the Pi, and the full-size goes into the other port of the Pi for the keyboard. Wish me luck, people. That's all I got to say. Wish me luck.
What size display is that, Joy? I remember that that from the Atrix.
Maybe 11 inch is what I'm going to say.
Okay. That's not that bad.
Isn't too big, isn't too heavy. And if you are in on the Eastern Seaboard, you might have easy pass for your car.
Yeah.
It looks like to me they all use the same thing to connect the device to your windshield. And what I found out is they're called 3M strips, I want to say. They're clear Velcro, really firm Velcro. I'm literally going to get some of that.
It's not a Velcro. It's like a mushroom head.
Well, it's technically, I think, using the same mechanics as Velcro, but it's literally hard plastic.
Right. Instead of being hook and loop, it's two identical things. So it sticks to itself. Velcro, you have an A and a B. This is all the same thing.
And I'm sorry, they're called fasteners is what they're called. They're not Velcro. They're called fasteners. And they stick to everything. So literally, I'm going to probably use fasteners and put the Pi right on the lid of the laptop.
And I forget about if using the dense kind, it's some ridiculous pounds per square inch that it holds. I used to, when I did photography, the gel cell batteries would mount on my camera bracket. And they were like 20 PSI, 20 pounds per square inch of stick. So it's pretty heavy duty.
Wow.
Very cool. Very cool. Okay, what I want to ask Brian is if there's any more notes that you would like to bring up, and I'll ask Richard, do you want to talk really quick about your crash plan?
Yeah, sure. I can give, I'll try to make it as quick as possible. You want me to go first?
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. So Dor and I have been talking about this stuff, and Dor kind of led me down the path, and I got the Banana Pi Pro, and the Banana Pi Pro has Wi-Fi and a SATA port on board. And I posted on my blog about how to do it. I made a YouTube video, and I think I posted also in GitHub either my changes or the links. Two people had GitHub resources that I used, and on my blog I posted the different changes. The idea behind the crash plan running on the Banana Pi, one, I was able to get a 5 terabyte drive for, I think it was $119 over Christmas time. And I want to put it at my in-laws' house about 20 minutes away. So I have a backup that I can go and get in case, something happens that I lose my data. Now, the Banana Pi Pro, it's running at like 3 or 4%. So it's really running at a low percentage. I do have it connected to the SATA port and to the 5 terabyte drive. It's a 3.5 inch drive, which I have to power externally. And I don't know that it's critically important that I'm using a Banana Pi Pro, SATA, blah, blah, blah. You probably, and that's one of the things I wanted to try with the Orange Pi 1, is how little horsepower do I need to do a crash plan? I wanted to try that out. The system's running. It's frickin' flawless. I am booting off the micro SD card, and I'm putting only the backups onto the SATA drive. And to do that, you have to do a add an additional command. Boy, see, now I'm doing this from memory. To slow the boot, because the Banana Pi Pro wants to boot off the SATA drive, but you have to slow the mount of it. And I believe it's NetBoot. I'll have to go to my blog and read the line. Runs flawless. I am just stink impressed with it, and very happy with how it's just going. All no issues, no running out of RAM. I've had it up for several weeks until I rearranged my network here, and haven't rebooted it because it needed a reboot or anything.
Yeah, I mean, this might be like one of the Eric statements of getting a little bit more than what you need. Okay. I never want to tax a processor continuously more than 20%. It, to me, if you hit a long, real long thing of 20%, you're aging the processor. And to me, the SATA for this kind of purpose was really just a convenience thing, because it basically let you buy, quote unquote, any hard drive that took SATA, and it's let you connect it. You could have did USB, but your speeds would have been a little bit low. You're probably only seeing a benefit with the SATA if you're moving big files, like, you know, 1+ gig files. Anything else, USB would probably be fine. But I got to tell you, my own cloud with SATA hooked up to a 250 SSD just runs like butter. It is literally a Ronco-esque set it and forget it mentality. And I'm really liking that. And I think it's because it is the Banana Pi Pro. Now, the Orange Pi 1 is only $10. If that thing can do it in a stable fashion, that is speaking leaps and bounds about A, crash plan stability, but also the Orange Pi itself.
Okay, there are a couple of things I wanted to mention about crash plan. But in the FSTAB, the Etsy FSTAB, for the mounting of the external SATA drive, you do default comma netdev, and actually that was in my YouTube video. I thought crash plan went through firewalls, but apparently you have to open up port 4242 to get it to work. The other thing is crash plan writes to a directory. Now, you could take that drive and mount it to whatever computer you're using at the moment and use the local crash plan to back up to the local drive and then plug it into whatever device you're using, Banana Pi, Raspberry Pi.
Like a preload.
So a preload. So you see the drive. So you're not waiting for all of that over the wire stuff to happen. And actually, that's my restore plan, is I'm going to just unplug the drive and put it in a SATA dock and do the restore.
Very cool. Yeah, I got to say, I love the idea of taking one of these devices over a friend's or family member's house and saying, look, I'm not going to kill your bandwidth, but this is for my local backup purposes. Now, a lot of people say crash plan shouldn't be used as external storage. It should only be used as a backup, which means nothing on that drive should be your working files. It should always be working files someplace else, then you copy them over to the crash plan. And the other thing I like about crash plan is you're using the free version, right?
Correct.
And the free version gives you pretty cool features, I think.
Well, it gives you all the features of the installed crash plan. You can see all of... One of the things that I liked about crash plan is I was bouncing back and forth between New York and Florida, and even though I have VPN and I can VPN into my home network, but if the computer's off, I don't have Wake on LAN set up. But I could actually browse the individual computer through crash plan and do a restore to my laptop and have the file there.
Nice.
So kind of, crude cloud storage, but yes.
Very cool, very cool. Yeah, and I do love the idea that I love the idea of possibly getting people together and, everyone having a 5 terabyte drive connected to their crash plan. Because in crash plan, you can say, okay, well, I'm going to give Brian 1 terabyte. I'm going to give Richard 1 terabyte. I'm going to give Eric 1 terabyte. And I'm going to get 1 terabyte off of Brian's, 1 terabyte of Richard's. And then we basically are syncing our backups to each other. But because of how crash plan works, Brian is never able to actually take my backup and restore it because he doesn't have the key. So it is, from what I can tell, pretty safe and pretty secure.
Correct.
looks like a 448-bit file encryption, which is pretty strong in my book.
Very cool, very cool. Did you want to bring up any of those links, Brian?
Before I do, I just wanted to mention that I really enjoy the idea of taking your hard drive to someone else's home just to have somewhat of a remote backup, you know, in the event, God forbid, your house ended up catching on fire or you had a major flood and you needed to have your data off storage to a remote location. I think this is a brilliant idea. And I thought about doing that myself, but I had an idea of using the OpenWRT with a VPN connection. So the actual file transfer could be in an encrypted tunnel as well too.
Okay. There's one or two more things that are cool about CrashPlan. CrashPlan actually does versioning. So if you have files, here's the whole reason I gotta have CrashPlan. I gotta have a backup. Because is it CryptoLocker or what is it called where they encrypt your hard drive?
Yeah. Yep.
So even if your whole hard drive gets encrypted and backed up, you can go to a prior backup before it was encrypted and use that as your restore point.
Yeah, and that is one of the big things on Windows. Some Windows have it built in, but they have it disabled from you using the interface shadow copies, I want to say. But with versioning offsite backups, like a lot of people say Carbonite, you can get that exact same functionality out of CrashPlan. I believe the only limitation you have on the free account, Richard, is it will only back up from your instance to that remote instance once a day.
No.
No, they did fix that?
No, it backs up continuous.
Well, that's good. Okay.
Yeah. My Banana Pi next backup is 5 minutes and 5 minutes to the CrashPlan central server.
Very cool. Very cool.
Oh, the other thing, you don't necessarily need the whole Banana Pi setup. You can do that from just the CrashPlan app that you're running on your machine. It's both the client and the server. And, you know, like if you're running CrashPlan right now, you could just say, hey, I'm going to share this drive and give my friend the backup code.
Gotcha. Very cool.
Absolutely. That is a nice, sweet deal. Now, I did want to make mention that this is what I'm about to mention. This is the main reasons why you can't really pay me to do this job here. If you guys want to check out, I really love this box. I think it's line 102 on the spreadsheet. This has a tiny fanless mini PC by Logic Supply. And if you don't know who Logic Supply is, they're familiar. If you're not familiar with them, they have a portfolio of manufacturing small industry systems that are built for extreme environments. So you can take, your Core i7, Core i5 machines, and you know they'll have a unique design to them. Well, the chassis itself will have a nice heat sink on it, so it doesn't overheat. And they have a really nice design. It's called the CL100. It's very similar to their ML100, which I think the ML100 is powered by their Bay Trail 5th-gen Intel Celeron processor. But the CL100 is powered by their quad-core Broswell processor, the N3150, which has Gen 8 graphics. And this thing, man, it has two HDMI ports. It's got a display port, which can be driven simultaneously in a very small chassis. So we're talking about 117 millimeters by 112 millimeters by 36 millimeters. Aluminum. It's got an aluminum chassis with no ventilation. It doesn't have a huge heat sink on it. It's a very sleek and a very slim, small design, and you can put this thing anywhere. It's got a mini PCI expansion slot for wireless expansion, a gigabit Ethernet port. It comes standard, includes 2 gigs of RAM, which you can expand up to 16 gigs or 32 gigs, or an mSATA SSD, expandable to 512 gigs of storage. I can't say enough about this. So It even has a comes with a USB Type-C port on the front facing with three USB 3.0 ports as well, too, on the front face with an audio speaker mini jack as well, too. It's powered by 12 volts DC with I think it consumes less than about I'd say 15 watts of power. I'm not too sure if that's under load or if that's idle. I can probably take a peek on that and see what that is. I think that's an idle power consumption. But this does have a list of really good options and really good features, but we're talking about a price tag of close to $400 at its base configuration.
Oh, I didn't see the pricing because I saw a call for pricing.
Yeah, they have, I think this came from an article I found on Lennox Gizmos, and they have a base price of $359 with the 2 gigs of RAM. I'm sure you can, from their website, you can actually customize it to have more RAM, or you can have more expandable storage as well too. But obviously, that's going to bump the price up a little bit. But quite honestly, I think that's a fairly decent price for this kind of machine.
It's $13 more for the 4 gigs.
Yeah,
hard to beat that. Yeah, I gotta say, this to me is the perfect enterprise solution device because it is rugged. You can put this thing probably just about anywhere: boiler rooms, valve rooms, places where they do woodworking kind of thing, and it would probably be just fine. And I gotta say, the case literally looks like you could probably drop like a quarter ton on it, and it might be okay.
Well, the CL100, it has a Nook, the Intel Nook design style, which, like I said, it's compact and it's sleek. The CL100 looks very pretty. The ML100, that looks like a beast. That's got a huge heat sink on it with the fins where you could probably keep a door open with it.
But it does have an adapter and it'll heat your coffee.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, man. Yeah, this thing is really nice. I really enjoy it.
Great find, man.
Yeah, we have a similar one. What line is this? Let's see. This is by AS Rock. And where can we find that on the show notes here? Looks like
$99.
Yes. This one's pretty similar to the CL100. They have taken a very sleek and stylish approach. This is the B-Box N3000, like I said, which is a very similar design. It's you can install Linux, you can install Windows, for very much similar to the CL100. Its outer casing, it's 110 millimeter by 46 millimeter by 118 millimeters long. But it's instead of a aluminum housing, it's got a plastic housing, which you can get in various colors like black, gold, white, and silver. But I found this has a unique property to it as well. You can use the 802.11ac dual wireless card as an access point as well too. So it has the Intel Ready Mode technology where you can turn it into an access point, which I thought was kind of a neat thing to do. It comes in a few different varieties. The N3000 model is a fanless model. Which has the Celeron processor. I don't want to speak out of turn. It's
ones I'm looking at are showing the Intel N3150 and both N3150.
And it looks like possibly N3000 is the fanless Intel N3000 processor for the fanless design.
Yes. And the fan design has the N3050 and the N3150. Now, the N3150 is a very similar model to the CL100 that we were just looking at, fanless model. The B-Box, they placed a fan on here for you, which is going to give you a little bit more, obviously a little bit more noise, about 20 decibels compared to the CL100. Which would be ideal for like a media center PC. You can stick it in the living room. then you're not going to get any noise from it whatsoever. But these are obviously, you know, dual quad core processors, base models, you know, 2 gigs of RAM. You can bump it up to 4 gigs of RAM, but dual channel 4 gigs of RAM. I was looking at the website here. They're showcasing that you can actually display 4K video, and you know they're showcasing a no-name motherboard which is streaming 4K video using a single channel of 2 gigs of DDL memory. Excuse me, DDR3 memory, where their dual channel 2 gigs of DDR3 memory is running pretty smooth with their 4K playback. So that does make a difference on the various channels, which board that you want to get. But yeah, we definitely, you can bump this up to 128 gigs of mSATA SSD storage. It's got a gigabit Ethernet card on it. It's got a 802.11 AC, including with Bluetooth 4.0. Even comes with a remote control, which I thought was kind of cool.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, and they do have a couple versions with dual core processors, but most of them do look like they are quad core. The only, and I gotta tell you guys, there's only one thing about this that I'm not, that kind of rubs me the wrong way, and you guys would never guess it.
What's that?
The font choice for AS Rock. Because the first time I saw this, I swore it was an ASUS type product. When I saw that AS, that was the only thing that stuck in my head. ASUS made a little sexy box. I mean, they can look at this thing. And then I'm sitting there looking at it, and then like 5 minutes later, I figure out, no, it's AS Rock. And it isn't bad. I literally don't want to hold that against them, because this is a good looking device with, I think, fair looking specs. I love the little remote control. I honestly could see that being very useful for a lot of people. You can support up to, I believe it was 3 monitors, which is, to me, it's just mind-blowing.
Yeah.
And I do love that little Wi-Fi ready mode access point. I think that's one of those little features that people will grow to like. Yeah, and to be honest, it's kind of fairly priced. If you go on Amazon, you can find these for as little as $154, $143 to get yourself started out. So that's a fair starting price, I'll say.
Yeah, that, I see the same thing, and I think they're showcasing a bare bones model where it probably doesn't come with a hard drive.
Yeah, that's okay. I don't expect the world for under $200, so I think that's fair.
But I do agree with you, Dora. I mean, this, yeah, Jesse, if you're looking for a media player type of hardware, and you know you're not too bothered by dropping a couple $100, this would be, you know, a very good solution, as well as the CL100 would be a very good solution as well too. It would be more than just streaming video with those two machines there.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Okay, guys, we've been going on for well over an hour here. We're not well over an hour, but over an hour here. This was maybe the fewest links we've ever brought to a show. And we brought at least seven or eight links. We got some really good stuff that we are talking about, really good stuff that's coming. Do not forget, you want a Raspberry Pi 3, send us an email, send us a voicemail. And I really do mean this in the nicest way possible. It's cool if you see me post it and you plus one it, or you mark it as a favorite on Twitter or whatever, but it would mean a little bit more if you would share it out. This is how Podnuts does marketing. It's because it's the laziest possible way I can get away with doing marketing. And I would encourage, and I'd be happy if everyone could give me just a little bit of help. And when they see these kinds of postings going out, just share them once in a while. I don't expect you guys to share them every time, but once in a while, share them out, because the more people we get to listen to the show, the more likely we are to keep giving away stuff. I will just put it that way. We've probably already given out, number-wise, this will be almost as much as any other Podnut show, but it's only because we can get $30 devices and actually have appeal to them, where if I'm on Android App Axe and I have a $30 device, it's probably not going to be a great device. So I definitely want to thank everyone for downloading. Rich, do you want to put any plugs out there? Because I'm sure nobody in the universe has ever heard of this LTTSORG thing, whatever. I can't even remember the letters. I've never heard of it.
Yeah, so live every Wednesday is the planet's longest running Linux podcast, and that starts live 8:30 p.m. till whenever, usually 10 o'clock or more. And I'm on there with a whole bunch of the original cast, and Dan is the man that does all the work. He is your counterpart in podcasting in the Tilts world. And I do have a blog, and if I could tell you what my blog address was by memory, I'd be a much better person. But I believe it's rich-blog.blogspot.com.
Sounds right, yeah. Dan, I'll say this, Dan is one of the coolest, smartest guys I think I've ever had the opportunity to sit down and chat with. Unbelievably cool guy. But I will also tell everyone, it's not always a family-friendly show over on Tilts. I'm not trying to say bad or anything. It's just not always family friendly. But yeah, but it is just period good people, I will say that, who just once in a while get a little carried away with some of their vernacular. But it's good stuff. Check them out. Hang out. Talk to them. They have a very open format with the live stream. Anybody can basically drop in and say hi. And they've even had people like Mark Shuttleworth on the show where they got an interview out of him. And RMS. Right? All people. You guys got RMS. You guys are a sucker for punishment, man. Okay, Brian, do you have any ending words?
Yeah, I just want to say thank you for Richard for joining us today. I really, really enjoyed your company. You had a lot to bring to the table. It was an honor having you on the show, and I definitely would like to have you come back on and share some insightful stuff with us too as well. I wanted to echo your words as far as getting us some input, how you like the show, questions, concerns, send us your feedback. I definitely am eager to hear some feedback from everyone. Definitely head over to the website, podnuts.com, and check out our Google Plus community as well, too. Post, repost, share dislikes, likes, and cool projects that you guys are doing out there, and I'm definitely eager to hear from everyone.
Yeah, 228 members strong in that community, which I do believe is one of the highest numbering Podnuts communities we have. It's like number two or three, so that's really cool. I want to thank everyone who's supporting that community. To be honest, so far, nothing but really good people in there. Having conversations about mini computers of all shapes and all sizes. I want to thank everyone for downloading. Thank everyone for sending in emails, sending in feedback. Do not forget, we have more giveaways, and do not forget, feedback is always welcome. It will always be read on the show. Even if I don't read it, great, it will be read on the show. With that, we will talk to everyone next week.